Just going to have a look and see who's all here. This is very different from being in the Zendo. So I hope everyone is staying warm in this cold weather. I had about 2 to 3 inches of snow yesterday where I live in Roberts Creek. And the last time I checked, it was snowing lightly. So maybe we're going to get a little bit more. And happy Valentine's Day. So this is the third and final talk on the Sandokai. Vicky and Kay enlighten us. I'm just going to get another.
Is today or tomorrow?
There. I'm using foam blocks to keep my talk high enough so I can read it. Vicky and Kay enlighten us to the first and second thirds of this poem, the last two Sundays. And for those of you who have missed the last two talks, Sandokai is a poem that was written by Shurto, who was one of our Chinese ancestors. His Japanese name is Sekito Kisen, but I will refer to him as Shurto, just so it's not confusing. And Sandokai is translated as harmony of difference and equality, which is what we call it in our sutra book, or the merging of difference and unity, which is what we used to call it. And I think there's other names for it as well. A Sandokai is a poem that we chant often in services. And I've always really liked this poem. And just to review, the word Sandokai is made up of three syllables. San, which refers to things, diversity, difference. And Do, which is sameness or oneness. And Kai refers to the relationship between San, the many things, and Do, the great whole being. And what Shurto is pointing out in this poem is that these two things are not two separate things, but are one. So continuing on from where Kay left off, the next lines of the Sandokai are, light and dark oppose one another, like the front and back foot in walking. The examples of light and dark are my favorite images from the Sandokai, both accessible and graphic. Light and dark are with us all the time and change constantly, and which we can see as the day progresses. As one increases, the other decreases. Think of dawn. As the light gets stronger, the darkness recedes. And vice versa at dusk. As it gets darker, the light recedes. It's not so much opposition as a balance of the two making up a larger whole. Suzuki Roshi mentions in a talk that darkness or brightness are within your own mind. He goes on to describe how if someone were to come to Tassajara from the city of San Francisco, they might find the nighttime at Tassajara very dark. But someone coming from a cave to Tassajara might find the nighttime at Tassajara very bright, like a capital city. In October, my partner and I moved to another home on the Sunshine Coast, and I found myself complaining about this very issue of light and dark. I found the new house dark, despite its many windows. Even with all the lights on, it seemed dark to me. And I found myself imagining that other lighter, brighter house. I was like the city dweller coming into a place like Tassajara. Kay talked about light and dark last week. Light represents the relative world of discrimination and individual things. In the light, we can see all the individual things, objects, people, etc. And the dark represents the absolute, the whole or ultimate reality. In darkness, we can't see all the individual things, objects, people. It is one whole thing, but with everything contained in that dark whole thing, which is where we see that light and dark actually merge or come together. The rest of that line is about the front and back foot in walking. As some of you know, I'm a now retired physiotherapist, so this image is meaningful to me. I have always observed people walking. I can't help it. When I see someone limping or exhibiting what we call an altered gait, my physio brain automatically starts to analyze what is going on to explain the gait pattern I'm seeing. Where is the problem coming from? Is it the ankle, the knee, the hip, the back? A common example would be hip osteoarthritis, where the individual displays what is known as Trendelenburg gait. When weight bearing on the affected or bad leg, the pelvis drops on the opposite side because of muscle weakness of the gluteus medius muscle on the affected side. When this occurs on both sides, causing the pelvis to drop on both sides as we walk, this was coined the Marilyn Monroe walk. You can also see this gait, kind of gait, with high fashion models as they sashay down the runway or the catwalk. Although that's not really an altered gait so much as something conscious that they do. When the knee is affected, the person tends to keep that knee locked in extension or straight throughout the gait cycle so that the individual walks like they have a peg leg. This is to avoid pain. I digress. But as in light and dark, all those individual things or components, legs, muscles, bones, nerves, etc., are all part of the whole of walking. And when one of those components is lacking or weak or absent, you appreciate the importance of all the different parts or things that make up that bigger whole. If one component is deficient or absent, it will disable walking, and if severe enough, take away the ability to walk at all. So walking depends on all those various parts and components working together in a coordinated way. I thought quite a lot about this line. You really need two legs to walk. Take away a leg and you cannot walk, unless, of course, you use crutches to take the place of that missing leg. And just as with darkness and light, as one progresses, the other recedes. So as one leg moves forward to take a step, the other leg recedes to become the back leg. It's pretty amazing, really, almost magical, the way that legs work together to allow us to move around. And again, I don't know if I really agree with the word pose that's used in this couplet, especially for walking. The legs really work together, are in relationship with one another. They are interdependent, one leg relying on the other leg for us to move forward in the world. Independence versus dependence is another major point in Sandokai. Each leg is independent with its own muscles and ability to move independently of the other leg, and yet it is also dependent on the other leg in order to perform this thing we call walking. The right leg is dependent on the left leg to weight bear so that the right leg is free to move forward during that swing phase. Enough about gait. This is what Suzuki Roshi had to say about these two lines. Darkness and brightness, absolute and relative, are a pair of opposites like a front and back foot when we walk. This is a very good way of explaining oneness or the actual function of a pair of opposites. It expresses how we apply pairs of opposites, like delusion and enlightenment, reality and idea, good and bad, weak and strong in our everyday practice. As has already been mentioned, we used a series of talks by Shunryu Suzuki, given on the Sandokai at Tassajara in 1970. And the title of the talk that includes this section of the Sandokai is called "The Willow Tree Cannot Be Broken by the Snow." And in this particular talk, Suzuki Roshi brings up strength, what strength really is. He brings up the story of the peach boy, Momotaro. An old woman picked up a peach from a river stream and brought it home. And out of this peach emerged Momotaro, a young boy. According to the story, He was very strong, but very kind and gentle. And Suzuki Roshi points out that without this strong, gentle side, you cannot be strong in the truest sense. This is a quote from this talk. It may be easier to fight and win than to endure without crying when you are defeated. You should be able to allow your foe to beat you, okay? Unless you can endure the bitterness of defeat, you cannot be really strong. I was a little reluctant to bring this up as an example, but it came up in my mind so strongly. Donald Trump. Here is a guy who is perceived as being very strong. But he's not strong in the way that Suzuki Roshi is talking about, true strength. He was not able to allow his foe to beat him. And as we saw, he never did actually concede the election to Joe Biden, and he seemed to both come apart and to become very desperate because he could not endure the agony of defeat. Donald Trump is like the strong-looking tree whose branches are broken by the snow because there is no softness, gentleness, or flexibility, which is part of being strong in the true sense. So on to the next couplets. Each of the myriad things has its merit, expressed according to function and place. Phenomena exist, box and lid fit, principle responds, arrow points meet. Shohaku Okamura has a helpful translation for the first line, which is, all things have their function. It is a matter of use in the appropriate situation. Everything expresses itself in a particular way, just as each individual person expresses himself or herself in completely different ways. As people, we each have our personalities, tendencies, strengths, and weaknesses. But from a bigger perspective, we are all connected and interdependent and make up a larger whole. The Buddha body is a phrase we use in Zen practice, especially used during sesshins, which are 5 to 7 days of intensive practice, where we sit, walk, chant, and eat together. We do everything like one big body, the Buddha body. This is the whole, but each person makes up this Buddha body and of course, individually, we all have our unique personality and traits. The individuals are San, and the Buddha body is Do. The relationship between them, the merging of the two, is Kai. You can't have one without the other. I'm always very moved by this creative Buddha body, and it really runs counter to our natural individualistic tendencies, my way, my schedule, putting my needs first. Following the schedule and rules together creates this container that holds us all and our practice. Supporting each other in this greater body is a selfless act of love, and it's very powerful. Suzuki Roshi made terms up. One of these was things as it is. Kate actually mentioned this in her Dharma talk last week. Things as it is describes the fundamental nature of reality, something beyond words. He also used the phrase, things as they are, to refer to our discriminating, dualistic way of thinking and perceiving, good, bad, right, wrong. The use of both the singular and plural in the same phrase stretches our ordinary way of thinking. And this was taken from Mel Weitzman's introduction to those talks by Suzuki Roshi. Here's a quote by Suzuki Roshi in this part of the poem. Usually, even though you say, I see things as it is, you don't. You see one side of reality and not the other. You don't see the background, which is re. You only see in terms of G, the phenomenal side of each event, and you think each thing exists only that way, but it is not so. To see things as it is, means to understand that G and Re are one, that distinction and equality are one, and that the application of the truth and the value of things are one. So Suzuki Roshi here mentions ji and ri, which are Japanese terms. Ji refers to relative reality, and ri refers to absolute or ultimate reality. So it's another way of referring to san and do. So the next section is, phenomena exist, box and lid fit, principle responds, arrow points meet. And again, another slightly different translation by Shohaku Okamura goes, phenomena exist like box and lid joining. Principle accords like arrow points meeting. This section, to me, seems to be fairly straightforward, pointing out how ji and ri, or relative and ultimate reality, fit together perfectly, like a box and its lid, or align exactly like arrow points meeting in midair. There is a story related to this. In ancient China, there was a famous archery master, Hiei. Kisho, who was Hiei's student, was another very good archer who became ambitious, wanting to kill Hiei so that he would become the best archer. And one day they met in an empty field, and Kisho took the opportunity to try and kill his teacher. But they were both very quick and accurate, and so Kisho let off an arrow, and Hiei at the same time did, and their arrows met right in midair because they're so quick and accurate. Usually we don't appreciate or realize both the relative and the ultimate truth of things and how intermeshed they are, or how perfectly aligned, like arrow points meeting. And this is Suzuki Roshi again. We can understand the middle way as ri, emptiness, and ji, somethingness. Both are necessary because we are human beings and our destiny is to live for possibly 80 or 90 years. We must have a selfish way of life. Because we have a selfish way of life, we will have difficulties that we should accept. When we accept difficulties, that itself is the middle way. Without rejecting your selfish way of life, you must accept it, but don't stick to it. Just enjoy your human life as long as you live. That is the middle way, the understanding of ri and ji. Where there is ri, there is ji. Where there is ji, there is ri. To understand difficulty in this way is to enjoy your life without rejecting problems or suffering. When Suzuki Roshi talks about having a selfish life and needing to have a selfish life, he is reminding us that we do live in the relative world where there are problems and difficulties. But that is where we live. So we need to accept that fact and live according to the parameters of life. Growing up, going to school, getting a job, maybe having a family, and dealing with all the situations that life throws us. The ultimate truth, ri, is right there at the same time. And if we understand this, we can enjoy our life even with all its problems. Zazen is a great example of Sambukai. We sit upright in the middle of our lives, the world of relative reality, or G, with the thoughts, the emotions, the physical sensations, even pain. But what we can touch during Zazen is ultimate reality, or Ri, where everything is okay. Just the body and the breath. Sometimes not even that. Kay had a quote in her talk last week that I really liked, from Kodo Sawaki Roshi. Zazen is to tune into the universe. And the only way to do this is through our body and mind. We sit being aware of all the thoughts, emotions, and sensations that arise and pass away. And in doing this, we become aware of the space and peace that is there also. So next time you sit Zazen, remember that you are tuning into the universe. The next couplet. Hearing the words, understand the meaning. Don't set up standards on your own. In the first line, words refer to the teaching. Words are like the finger pointing at the moon. These words and teachings are meant to help us realize what is being pointed at, but sometimes we get stuck on the finger itself rather than what it is pointing at or pointing out to us. Shurto included this line because he saw that as the teachings were being transmitted from teacher to students, because each of the teachers expressed the teachings differently, this led to different divisions and eventually different schools. And this led to conflict sometimes between the many different schools. This is what Suzuki Roshi has to say about this. If you receive words, you should understand the source of the teaching that is transmitted from Buddha and is beyond each teacher's own way of expressing or suggesting the truth. Even though we are practicing Zen, which originated in China and was developed many centuries after the Buddha lived, we still teach and follow what the Buddha said, the same truths that he taught so many years ago in India. Don't set up standards on your own ties in with the first line. Historically, as different Zen schools were established, different rules and standards were set up. The potential downside of this is that we can get caught up or stuck in the rules or standards and think it is the only way to practice. Again, we get caught in the finger pointing at the moon. But rules serve a purpose too and are important, as they help create a solid container for practice for an individual and everyone else. Remember the Buddha body? We need our rules and guidelines to follow so that everyone can support and help each other in our practice. In 2011, exactly 10 years ago, I did a 3-month practice period at Tassajara. Actually, right exactly 10 years ago. For those of you who don't know about Tassajara, it is a monastic training center for the San Francisco Zen Center, located in an isolated area inland from Carmel in Southern California. And this is where Suzuki Roshi gave the talks on the Sandokai that we have been referencing. During the practice period that I was at, there was a schedule and rules called the Shingi. And I brought my little handout that I kept. You can't see it very well, but this is the schedule, daily schedule. And then there are 5 pages of guidelines of conduct. And quite a number of participants I noticed had difficulty following the Shingi, you know, the schedule and all the rules. And there were a lot of people who would try and rebel against it. People would complain about how early we had to get up in the morning, which was 3:50 a.m., or how they weren't allowed to listen to music while they were there. And one fellow who was a first-timer to Tassajara asked in a very public forum why he couldn't have sexual relations while he was there. Now, according to the guidelines of conduct, we were not to begin a new sexual relationship during practice period or to engage in non-committed or casual sexual relations. He actually went on to inform us that he was accustomed to having sex every day. And he seemed genuinely put out about this issue. It was very interesting. He had his own standards and rules in this regard, but they were not helpful for supporting the practice at the time. We seem to be conditioned to have what we want, when we want it, and regardless of others. And this is making up our own rules and standards. We can see another example of this during the pandemic, when some people flubbed the rules of wearing masks, social distancing, and avoiding gatherings. And the bigger issue with this kind of behavior is that these people will or may become affected with the virus and then spread it to other people, some of whom are elderly, frail, medically unwell, or immune compromised. And some of those people will have bad outcomes, possibly death. So those COVID rules and restrictions are to keep everyone safe. We are both independent individuals and dependent on each other. This is from the introduction again to the talks by Suzuki Roshi, written by Mel Weitzman. He, Suzuki Roshi, also made up the word independency, which he used to express the dependent and at the same time independent nature of our lives. When I asked him about this once, I said that English has the words independent, dependent, and interdependent, but I never heard the word independency. He laughed and said that he had made it up. He explained that we are completely independent and at the same time completely dependent. If you think that you are just independent, that is wrong. If you think that you are just dependent, that is not right either. Interdependent might seem like the correct word here, but Suzuki Roshi used independency to express that ambivalent quality. So the next two lines go, practice is not a matter of near or far, but if you are confused, mountains and rivers block your way. I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, don't waste time. Because we are already enlightened, we are Buddha nature, there is no near or far in terms of realization. But we don't understand this deeply, and we create our own obstacles, which are like mountains and rivers blocking our way. It is so easy to fall into the trap of thinking that you are trying to attain something through meditation or trying to reach some kind of goal, and that in itself is an obstacle. Another way of creating mountains and rivers that block is to think that your practice should be a certain way. When I was practicing many years ago in quite an intense setting in Asia, I thought that good practice was those moments of calm and rapture. Also, I wanted those experiences to stay, to last. Without even realizing what I was doing, I spent a lot of energy and many hours repressing the other mind states and emotions that came up and were not pleasant and seemed to me problems in terms of my progress. This so did not work. I definitely created rivers and mountains that blocked my way. This is what Suzuki Roshi had to say to this part of the poem. When you are involved with selfish practice, you have some idea of attainment. When you strive to reach a goal or attain enlightenment, you naturally have the idea, I am far from the goal, or I am almost there. But if you really practice our way, enlightenment is right where you are. This may be difficult to accept. When you practice Zazen without any idea of attainment, there is actually enlightenment. For many years, I had a slip of paper taped to my bathroom mirror that said, if you are unable to find the truth where you are, where else do you expect to find it? This is a quote from Ehe Dogen, who was our great ancestor in Japan and the founder of Soto Zen. He is reminding us that the truth is right here and right now. The last line, I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, don't waste time. We have a saying in Zen, practice like your hair is on fire. And this is meant to be a strong encouragement to practice sincerely and ardently. We forget that our lives are limited and short. According to Buddhist teachings, to be born a human is a rare opportunity. It is likened to the chances of a blind turtle living in the depths of the ocean, surfacing every 100 years for air and putting his head through a yolk that is floating on the vast ocean. So our human life is precious and fleeting. There is a sense of urgency regarding our practice and how we use this life of ours. The Han, which is a big wooden board that is struck to summon people to the Zendo for Zazen, has an inscription on it that also reminds us to heed this advice. This is what is written on our Han at Mountain Rain Zendo. Be aware of the great matter of birth and death. Life passes swiftly. Wake up. Wake up. Do not waste this life. the great matter of life and death. I think that if we really live knowing that we are going to die, we would not waste time. Yes, I know, we all know that we're going to die, but we don't live from that perspective. And we allow ourselves to be constantly distracted from the fact of our mortality. Shurto is encouraging us to look at our lives honestly and make our best effort as Zen practitioners to realize Sandokai. In closing, I want to share with you a story that I heard from a talk that Norman Fisher did on Sandokai. And it illustrates how Sandokai can play out in our everyday lives and be a positive influence. A sportscaster was being interviewed on TV. He was known to be a cranky, critical kind of guy who had a habit of being hard to get along with. He was also known for getting fired from his jobs for saying and doing controversial things. But he reported that his life had changed for the better, partly from therapy, but mostly from getting a dog. He had never had one before. And at this point, the interviewer asked him, "Is it because the dog loves you unconditionally?" To which our man replied, "I don't know if my dog loves me unconditionally, although he might love me because I have the food." No, it was from walking with this dog. And even though they walked down the same street every day, this dog was so excited, enthusiastic, and full of joy about everything. The stinky smells, the people going by, a plastic bag blowing in the wind, even the movement of his own body as he trotted along. To the dog, everything was perfect. What this man admitted to the interviewer was how this daily routine with his dog had made him calmer and just a little bit happier. He hadn't been totally transformed into a different person. He was still a somewhat cranky and critical person, but he was a little happier, calmer, and he hadn't been fired from a job in a long time. He told the interviewer that in watching his dog during these walks, he had to ask himself why he was so upset about the way the studio was treating him, or how the lighting wasn't good enough, or what was being said or not said to him or about him. How when he thought about his dog and how the dog seemed to see life, all his problems seemed so stupid. So seeing life through his dog's perspective every day had opened up this guy's own perspective to something greater. So here the dog represents Do, the perfect unison of everything, being thrilled with just being alive. The guy represents the San, the cranky, critical, hard to get along with person who sees the differences and the particularities. The Kai is that relationship between the dog and the man, between the San and the Do parts, and shows us how right in the middle of our relative lives with the thoughts, discriminations, right, wrong, good, bad, smells, sounds, sights, a bag blowing in the wind, right in all those things is the ultimate truth, that everything is perfect, joyful, love. Thank you for listening.